You are in for a legendary podcast here today. As you know, I've interviewed some of the biggest names, Brady, Pacino, Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Vince Vaughn, you name it, Tommy Hilfiger. But today we have the founder of Reebok Shoe, very good friend of mine, and the CEO of Reebok, and an exclusive first ever. And this is the sort of reemergence of what was a forgotten brand and now has now come back at the forefront. And really sort of becoming cutting edge in a place where Adidas and both Nikes have lost contact with their base. Under Armour has gone down, yet Reebok is actually on the rise as well. It's sort of a rebirth, never went away, but a rebirth as well. And today we have a man who's the CEO, but actually interned in 1991. He went from intern to CEO currently. Please welcome Todd Krinsky. How are you, Todd?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
And then we have Joe Foster, who needs no introduction on this show because he's been on a few times. He's a ratings goal, who is the founder of Reebok. How are you doing, Joe?
I am doing fine, JT. And it's good to be on here with Todd. It's fantastic, this. I love it. Yeah.
So let me ask you a question, Joe. When you sold, does that mean Todd is basically Todd, you came as an intern when Joe sold? Is that a fair assessment? Because the timeline seems the same.
It was right around that time. Actually, I wish I was an intern. I actually started the mailroom. I delivered mail. I delivered mail for 14 months at Reebok. That's how I kind of got my way. And I was kind of, this is back in the day when there was a lot of mail. So, you know, I was pushing the cart. I was putting mail in people's spots. And I was trying to, like, you know, I was working at Foot Locker at night and I was delivering mail at Reebok during the day. And even just being around the Reebok building and the energy, I fell in love, you know, with the brand, just even though I was just delivering mail, and I was able to hustle into a role later on. But I think that was around the time when Joe was making the move, right when I entered.
What was it that you loved about the brand?
Well, what was happening, what was very interesting is, like, so I was working at Foot Locker at night. So I was selling Nike, I was selling Reebok pumps, I was selling Adidas and all that. But, like, being there in the day, there was such an entrepreneurial spirit at Reebok that I think started with the Foster family, moved into the Fireman family. Like, there was always this entrepreneur spirit. There was always this feeling of doing things a little more disruptive and different than maybe the status quo of a Nike and Adidas. And you could feel that in the building. You could feel that. And I happened to spend a lot of time with the designers and the engineers at the time. And I was just picking their brain every day. But there was this challenger kind of mentality in the building. There was this kind of mantra about the fact that, you know, it was always about taking a risk. It was always about being entrepreneur. And it was always about being in sport in a unique way. And this is what I gravitated towards. This is what I fell in love with. And you could feel it in the building. It's permeated through the entire building. Even if you were just delivering mail, man, you felt it.
So Joe, what was it about the culture you built where that energy was there when it transferred, right? Because when you sold out at that, the shift of taking over your baby and giving it to basically selling it to somebody else, you know, was the brand at that time, from your mind, like, you couldn't take it any higher, but there was still that culture energy? What was the energy he's talking about that you created?
I think the great thing was that when Paul Fire and I met, I knew he was a guy who was hungry. In fact, to quote him, he had wrinkles in his belly. He needed that. He needed food. He needed something. And at Reebok, we'd always had that inquisitive form of entrepreneurism. We wanted change. As you know, and I've said before, it took me 11 years to get into America. First time, 1968. We got there in 1979. So, yeah. And at the point, that was fine. The one thing I realized was that if we were going to really expand Reebok, Reebok was going to make it. It wanted an American in charge in America. And I remember to Paul, saying to Paul, "Paul, look after America. The rest of the world will come." And what was created in America was that fun side of entrepreneurism. The thing that we had a bit of tongue in cheek on occasions with Nike and Adidas. We like to enjoy it rather than just be dead serious businessmen. So it was great. And I could realize there were so many people at that time. Arnold Martinez, Steve Liggett. I mean, these were the people, and there were a lot of people that really fell in love. just as Todd said, he fell in love with the brand. And that's the one thing that I really treasure most. People falling in love. And I travel now around and we meet a lot of Americans. Americans say, oh, pump. I was a kid. And I loved that. I loved those pumps. But parents wouldn't buy it. I had to get a job. So it was wonderful to have those people who were in Reebok at that time. And it wasn't that I was getting too old, but I thought, this is time for a lot of youngsters to come in and take over. Just again, like Todd, feel for the brand, have ideas. So it was great to step back, which I really did. Rather than retire, I stepped back because I've never lost contact. But stepping back, other people can take those reins and take it to the next level.
So Todd, the story from the mailroom, I want to take you from the mailroom to the CEO, which, by the way, that's a great title of a book, by the way, from mailroom to CEO. I mean, yeah. You see that in movies, right? That's like almost a Hollywood script. Take us to the process.
People talk about Michael J. Fox, The Secret of My Success. He went from the mailroom to CEO. That's a movie people reference with me sometimes.
Yeah, no, I'm trying what movie? So it's good you brought it up, but like you literally went from the, so what was it? The type of person, what did you do to get promoted at every level? And I'm sure there's also sometimes that corporate ceiling, that, you know, politics involved. It's a big company. And so take us through that process of growth from you as a male person all the way to the CEO. How did that happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I was definitely a go-getter and I loved the industry from the beginning. Even when I was on the retail floor at Foot Locker, I loved the energy of the shoe wall. I loved kids coming in, talking to them what they wanted, selling product. This was just something for me I gravitated towards when I was 16 and started selling shoes. So it was in me from a very early age. At Reebok, you know, I had this just, I had this real strong passion. And when I first started the mailroom, I actually took a coupon. I made a coupon. It was like a dollar bill with my face in the middle. And I thought, I figured out how long I could work for free and just with my Foot Locker kind of minimum wage salary at night. And I put a coupon in every executive's mailbox that said, Todd Krinsky will work for free. I'm in the mailroom now. I got a passion for sneakers. Give me a shot. And, you know, I got a lot of awareness from a lot of executives. You know, they couldn't hire me for free for legal reasons, but I did end up getting a role out of that. And I ended up working as an associate product development manager working on tennis at the time. That was my first kind of my role. But I think the one thing that kind of drove me is I really, in an early age at Reebok, playing basketball one day at lunch in our building, some of the executives came up to me and everyone said the same thing. They said, no matter what you want to do, because every kid at a young age says sports marketing. Half the kids don't even know what they're saying when they say that, but they like sports. They majored in marketing, so they want to do sports marketing. And it's like this empty kind of like career path, they say. And I was one of those kids that said that. And then a couple executives pulled me aside. They said, listen, I'm going to tell you one thing. Product is king. And it's the best piece of advice I ever got, because every single choice I made, every way I've gone, is to learn as much as I can about product and to be an expert in product. And it's really guided my whole career. And then the second thing I think is I was just open to opportunity. You know, I was 27 years old. I was just involved in a group that signed Allen Iverson. I was really excited about the fact that, you know, two young people convinced firemen to sign Iverson. I was part of that process. Then they said, hey, do you want to go move to Busan, Korea? And do you want to work in a development center? And do you want to learn how to make shoes? And normally a lot of people would be like, no, I'm good. I want to stay here doing marketing in Boston for Reebok. But I was like, no, I'll go. And I went to Korea for 3 years and I spent time in a development center where we made some of the best innovative product in the 90s for Reebok. I was involved in the development side of Pump and DMX and Hexalite, some of the things that Joe mentioned earlier. So I just learned. And then I was ready. I was ready to come back in 99 and start a real kind of fast career path. I went into, you know, kind of product marketing and basketball. And then I ran our RBK division where we signed artists like Jay-Z and Pharrell and 50 Cent and did all of that. And then I ran our sports marketing division for a while where I signed, you know, the NBA and NFL and guys like Peyton Manning. It was just, and then I went back into product my love in about 2011. And I really started to get back into building the product brand at Reebok, especially the classics business, which is so dear to Joe's heart, which was kind of, broken in 2011. It was really broken. And I went back in and I kind of had the institutional knowledge at the time how to fix it. And we fixed the classics business. It's our most vibrant business today. And then kind of was on a real strong trajectory at that point, because I got back into that kind of the product side of things. And Ended up running all of product, was chief product officer before becoming the CEO. So it was a really, I think it was a journey where I always followed the mantra of product is king. I was really passionate. I took opportunity. I said yes to basically every opportunity just to learn, to kind of get to the point of where I am today. And amidst all of that, you know, in 2006, Adidas bought Reebok, which was a very challenging period for us. But, you know, it's funny. People always say, well, why did you stay during that rough period? You know, we had a competitor in Adidas owning a competitor in Reebok. It was a very difficult model for us to work. We were very constricted in what we can do. But I knew from the beginning it wasn't working. And I had a feeling it was going to get sold, especially the last few years. And so the reason I stayed is to be part of the team to get Reebok back to its rightful place, which is what Joe and Paul created. And that's why I'm here. And I stuck through some really lean, challenging years to do that.
Let me ask you a question. What do you, first of all, the drive you have is very similar to myself and Joe. I own over 70 companies and brands. I do business all over the world. You would have been a phenomenal entrepreneur. Let me ask you, did that ever come to your mind? Because the same work ethic you had from the mailroom, I mean, you could be running any company or have created your own shoe, kind of like the On story, right? When the guy left Nike to create the shoe. Why didn't you never venture that? Or did you really so down par that fab of like,
yeah,
at Reebok that it's like, at this point, this is the path I'm in and yeah, I'm at where I'm at. But
it's a great question. And it was never about being comfortable or complacent. That's not me. I'm moving a mile a minute. So the decision is to, and I did have a couple opportunities. One with to go do something with a celebrity in the athletic space, and then one to start a company in the floor space. I don't know. You know, for me, at some level, even though my last name isn't Foster, like Reebok is a family business to me. You know, I grew up here. You know, and I really have a strong passion for this company, and I really have a strong commitment and passion to the people that work for this company. And I've always said, like, I just want to leave with this brand back on top. And then I'd be kind of happy. And that's a little bit of my mission, you know? And so, yes, I have an entrepreneurial bug, and I've been able to do a lot of entrepreneurial things at Reebok. I mean, I want to be clear that the company that Joe and Paul built is very entrepreneurial. Like we invite risk, we invite failure, we take shots. And so I do feel I get to live a little bit of that, not probably at the level that you do it. But I do feel I get to like take a lot of chances. We enter new categories. I mean, in 2001, Paul was like, what are we going to do? We created an entire music category that didn't exist in the industry. Sign Jay-Z, sign 50 Cent, sign Pharrell. This was very entrepreneurial. We had no idea how to do it. So there have been moments where I've been able to explore that. But I guess what's kept me here is just, yeah, the passion for the company and the vision that we could get it back to somewhere great.
Joe, let me ask you a question. What year did you feel that Reebok was no longer what you started and what you felt it was when you handed it over after 1991? Obviously, at this point, you sold. And did you feel like this is not the same company that I created? And you remember what year was, and how did that make you feel?
Well, I think it's a period of time rather than just a year. What happened is that when I backed out, and I backed out because it needed money. We had a great opportunity. So many great opportunities were coming along. And so I sort of backed away a bit. I stayed for quite some time. I was in, I think I really sold by 84 at that time, because we just hit onto aerobics. And if we had not had the money that Stephen Rubin brought to it, that would have been disaster. We would never have managed to do the production that we needed. So I just kept on with that. And as the company grew, I then put on the global market. I was going around the world all the time, picking up and getting on the global distribution. And it got to a point where eventually I just became an ambassador. And I'm waving flags and I'm getting on and off planes. And for me, well, I mean, we know that Todd's gone through a period of life. What he was really excited, and he had an opportunity to put back what Reebok started as, and that was a company that had fun, enjoyed, and developed, and took risks. He's had a chance of doing that. By the time I backed out, we were a large company, and from Jeff and myself, when we started as two people, we'd always had problems. We'd always taking those problems, taking those challenges, and we learned how to take a challenge and turn it into an opportunity. By the time I stepped out, which was, the end of 1989, I wasn't in a position to do that. I was just waving flags, and I thought a lot of other people can come in and do that. Now it was a corporate body, and I could enjoy it in a different way. So I stepped back because I had my challenges, just as Todd had his challenges. And I think he's the same as I was. He enjoys the challenge. And we always used to take that challenge and turn it into an opportunity. And the number of times we did that was incredible. And that was taking risks. So I backed off. I didn't forget Reebok. I just hoped that one day we would get someone like Todd, someone who would bring it back. Paul had run out of steam as well. And so it needed, just as Paul ran out. I didn't say I ran out of steam, but you need youth. You need that energy. So that's why I backed out.
So Todd, what does Reebok stand for now? I feel, and correct me if I'm wrong, I feel that Nike has lost its way in a way of, you know, losing Tiger Woods, Roger Federer, a lot of big names, and it's got like a huge animal. But on the other side, Jordan is just crushing it. I felt like Under Armour made a big push and all of a sudden just kind of not as apparent anymore. You have the shoe On, which Roger Federer is an investor in, which they gave him a piece. And they seem to have done really well marketing online and carving a specific niche. Puma is very European.
Yeah.
Adidas is soccer, right? I mean, it just, that's, or kind of like you talked about the classics, right? Almost more like I wear with my jeans and stuff like that. Where does Reebok stand in your view in the market today? And where do you want to take it?
It's a great question. I think it's a little back to what Joe said. You know, Reebok has always been a really strong, irreverent is a really important word, irreverent sports brand with a strong pipeline of innovation. So when you think about Reebok, we're one of the few brands that can play with a rich, rich heritage business with our classics that's timeless today, but can also play in high, high innovation. And so when you think about the brand today, it really is a brand that takes a little bit more of an irreverent approach to sport. So I think if you look at Nike messaging, if you look at Adidas messaging, if you look at Under Armour, maybe some do it better than others, but they all kind of have the same message, which is kind of like, be like this athlete, run as fast as you can, wear this shoe. And I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm saying that's a formula that works for certain brands. But if you think about what we've done, and Joe mentioned this earlier, we've always kind of been a little bit irreverent, a little bit disruptive in the market, the way we've launched innovation, the athletes we've signed, like the Allen Iversons and Shaqs that are larger than life. So we've always tried to present the consumer with an alternative. We're going to make great innovative product for sure, world-class product for athletes, but our message may not always be so serious. It's kind of this idea is, you know, life is short, play hard. You know, life is not a spectator sport. We're trying to inviting people in to fulfill their potential, but we're not trying to just talk about elite athletes all the time. So I think from a product proposition perspective, we have a great heritage business. We've got great innovation, but we are this kind of American inspired sports brand now that brings an irreverence to the market that I think is really, the tone is really relevant for today. And I think that's how we kind
of— like a Reebok Rebels? Like a Reebok Rebels in a way? Like you're just—
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely a challenger brand. Yeah, definitely a challenger brand, definitely disruptive. We just launched a new running shoe last week and we have this running hacks campaign that you can look at. I don't think any other brand would launch running this way. It's a fun kind of little bit of having fun with today's culture in running. So even though the shoe itself, you mentioned On, the shoe itself, when you look at third party testing, competes at the highest level with the Hoka's, Ons, and Nikes from a running perspective. But the way we market it is a little more irreverent to the consumer. And I think there's a place for that in the market. The other thing I would just quickly mention is that you mentioned the Nikes and Adidas. I think maybe they are having some of their issues or whatever you want to say, but the consumer is different now. The consumer is open to a lot more footwear brands than they were 5 years ago. This is the biggest shift in our industry right now. And when you look at maybe Nike having some Foot Locker having some challenges, and it's all predicated off the fact that consumers are open to Hoka. They're open to On. They're more open to New Balance in different ways than they were before. So I think we're going through a renaissance period in this industry that hasn't happened in 15, 20 years, where the key player.
Like the beer? Is it like the beers? Is it like the beer? You're from Boston, so Samuel Adams, when they kind of came in, where they the craft beer market. So if you take a look at Brooks and Hoka and all those. There, so are the niches now and the riches. Joe talks about white spaces. It's one of his most famous lines, which made me go viral on social media. What's the white space now for Reebok? Like the thing that you're going to carve. And Joe, I'm curious to hear what your thoughts about what his white space is compared to your initial, and whether or not they're really the same or it's just an improvement of what you've had. So the white space, Todd?
Yeah, I mean, I think the white space for us is that I think that the brands right now have been really kind of, I think there hasn't been a lot of innovation, and I don't think there's been a kind of different point of view on sport recently. So we're coming in very disruptive. We're coming in with innovation. If you think about Reebok in the 90s, it was bold, unapologetic. It was a consistent pipeline of innovation. We talked to the consumer different about sport. We signed athletes that kind of had a little bit of a different perspective than the normal athlete. That's what you're going to see. You're going to see a disruptive sports brand re-enter the market in the way that we did before. New playbook, but the ethos is what really put Reebok on the map in the 90s. I think that's really the white space. But then I think we can also, the other great thing about Reebok, when the trends shift to kind of lifestyle and white sneaker, we've got tremendous heritage there in lifestyle running, tennis, and basketball. When it shifts to more innovation, like what's kind of happening right now, we've got a prolific kind of pipeline of innovation. So that's what you can expect from Reebok. I think the white space is that the industry's tired. It's kind of a little bit quiet. And I think you need a disruptive player to kind of speak different to the consumer.
Well, I accept your invitation to be that disruptive place. And Joe and I both agree, right, Joe?
That's right, good.
Yeah, okay. Joe, so how is your white space? Is it different than what Todd is doing? And obviously this different time period, right? But how do you feel that their white space now is merging into what you initially thought about Reebok?
Well, I haven't had a longish life. I'm able to look back, and Todd's right, heritage is there. We can go back and things go around in circles. Well, they don't really go around in circles. They cycle upwards. They just cycle around. So they come in a different way. We have a heritage that can go back, right? We can go back to mid-90s and a lot of successes there. We can go back to the 50s. We can actually go back to 1895. We can go back to my grandfather inventing the spike run issue. We can go back to his first world records in 1904 in the family business. Okay, it was called J.D. Boo Foster then. It's had a change of name, and here we are now with Reebok. But we have so much history, and I think that is our white space. Our white space is we can turn the page so often and find a new place that we can revive. As Todd said, classics are coming back. They're there now. They're brilliant, and I think this is something that not even Nike, not even Adidas can go back that far. Adidas started making slippers. That was their business way, way back. But Foster's, Reebok, we've always been sport, and we've always been finding new spaces.
Yeah.
Have you thought about doing an ad on going, back to the basics of like with Jill Foster, with more like people love the story behind the brands. I mean, that's part of the emotional. Something starting with Joe progressing, like, then Iverson, then Shaq, like almost like how it started and we've only just begun. There's a lot of people that like to see the story behind the brands. It's becoming the story, right? And you have a great story and with adversity as well, which is, that's what people go through life. It's not always just peaches and roses. So have you thought about incorporating a campaign from how it started, how's it going and where we're going type of feeling to it?
Yeah, it's really such a great point. We have a brand new consumer out there that doesn't really know Reebok, because I think we had this, our story was constricted under Adidas, to be honest with you. It was very quiet under Adidas. So now we also have new owners. We have new partners around the world now. So yes, we have been talking about how you bring that incredible history that started, with the running spike all the way through to all the disruption of entering a new category in fitness. Like aerobics didn't exist until Reebok kind of, you know, supplied women with it, with that product, you know, in the 80s. And then it went to all the disruption in the 90s with innovation and Iverson and Shaq and all that. Then we entered the music business, the first company to do that. And then on to all the stuff that we've done since with innovation and classics. So there's an incredible history there. And we are trying to right now determine how we tell the history of Reebok to a new generation. And you're right, storytelling is so important today, but how we don't lean too much on it because we want to be a brand of choice for the future generation. So it's a kind of fusion of that. But yes, we are kind of thinking that. And that's one of the things, I don't know if you saw, but really quickly, you know, we brought Shaquille O'Neal and Allen Iverson back into the fold in official executive roles. This is something that no other brand has done. Other brands may have athletes in perpetuity outside of maybe Michael Jordan. Every other athlete, maybe they get some shoes or they go to a clinic. But, you know, we have an amazing relationship with all of the personalities through those eras that we can bring back. And that's what we did with AI and Shaq. So I think we are looking to do that. Yeah.
I have and I want to talk about celebrity branding because I think I'm fascinated by it, you know, especially being big on branding. Have you thought of a campaign, I'm just putting out there, to do something when nobody has done, right? So the model has been celebrity base, you know, yeah. The Jordan, the Messi's, the Steph Curry's and everything.
Right.
And what if the campaign would be kind of like, you know, and you did that with my neighbor, ultimately just like yeah. regular people and like, you know what, but alongside maybe the athlete, like, hey, I'm the brand, like Reebok, like at Reebok, you're the brand, you know what I mean? As opposed to what everybody does, the celebrity, and put a campaign. And if you remember this, and they did this in South Africa, and I remember this was shocking, where Coke created cans of Coke with your name on there. Like it was, and literally when it go viral, people would buy because it had their names on there. And that might be a cool thing about how Reebok is a brand of the people. Yeah. And you know what I mean? Because that's who it is. Like, you know what I mean? And yes, you have some celebrities, but you know what? I'm the brand too. So, you know what I mean? And that would be like a funny, especially with Shaq being funny. It'd be like, and I think then people like me, or, you know, I speak to 10,000 plus people on stages and stuff like that, be like, hey, listen, I'm the brand. I'm the endorser, the sponsors. And I think that because it's become so celebrity thing. What do you think about that?
I think that it sounds like you have a microphone in our building. I am telling you right now, as we sit here on whatever day it is, March 6th, we actually are doing something very similar to that. We have a campaign. I don't want to give too much out because it's pre-production, but the sentiment of what you're talking about being kind of the people's brand, and about kind of taking some of the athletes with regular people and telling their stories, and being that challenger people's brand. This is the space we're in. And what you're talking about is an execution of that. So yeah, I'd love to share more of it with you as we move forward because you're speaking.
No, of course, I understand, but at least I know my thoughts. It's all, always been a thought in my head. Why is celebrity branding so so important in the shoe business? You go way back, so you've seen it all with all the celebrities. What is it that if a celebrity wears the shoes makes people want to buy? I feel that the old school Reebok was really about the white spaces, the shoe, the people, right? But as the movie Air with Jordan, I mean, that's probably one of the greatest success stories, and you know, through all these celebrities and shoes, why do you think, after talking to the brands, the celebrity, to the consumer, what is it that if a celebrity wears the shoe, somehow it's worth more, it's more valuable, it creates this? What is it between the relationship between celebrity branding, and how important is it for Reebok to stay relevant to still get those celebrities, because we live in an influencer world?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone likes to say they're moving away from it, but it's hard because it does work. I mean, it's one of the few things that you can really drive an ROI when you sign a certain, especially young female influencers today. I mean, you can really see their ROI when a certain person wears a shoe, talks about a shoe. Listen, I think when you look at the business, if you go into a mall, the consumer has a choice between 100 shoes on the wall at any given time, you know, from 10 brands. And this is kind of what the consumer is looking at. And so anytime a young influential person, especially somebody that has a fashion appeal, I think this is something that's changed a little bit. Not any music celebrity is going to drive footwear sales, and not any basketball player is going to drive footwear sales. But you do have that upper echelon of talent that they understand fashion. They know what they're wearing. They know how to style it. Sometimes it takes the consumer seeing the way that the consumer wears it. What do they wear the shoe with? How do they lace the shoe? All of these little nuances are really important to drive fashion. So I think because there's so many shoes out there and such a wide kind of cross-section of shoes, seeing people you admire and respect fashion-wise wear it I think is something that still pushes it over the edge. And I think the other thing that you talked about is storytelling. When you do collaborate with somebody and they are truly involved in the creation of the product, they bring their personality, they bring their interest into creation. I think that becomes also a lot of interest to the consumer that's always looking for the story and why did this person get with this brand, you know? And I think the more creative and the more the talent's into the process, the more the consumer buys off on it. And so that's another big part of it is just the storytelling. But it's not going away.
One more question. One question on each side I'm going to ask you, and then we're going to end with Joe. As the CEO of a billion-dollar company, Reebok, what does your day-to-day look like? There's always a curiosity. You're the man on top of the food chain. What time do you wake up? How do you structure your day? You know, as being a CEO, you have all these direct reports. Are you still obsessed on the product kind of creation because that is your background? Or at this point, you have to rely. Give us an idea of what your day-to-day looks like. No, it's different every day, but your role as a CEO, as the driver.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the backdrop of this, I would say I'm going through a journey to try to spend less time on the product creation side because this is my passion. I still feel like, you know, I can make the calls on product. Sometimes when I walk in a product meeting, the teams are like, okay, he's going to tell us kind of what to do again. And so I try to be very disciplined about, you know, not getting too involved in that anymore. But, you know, I would say I'm on the road a lot. So I'm one of the, I guess I'm a CEO that likes to be in front of customers. I like to hear the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's how I kind of learn the business. So I'm constantly in front of customers around the world with our markets around the world. So no 2 days are the same because I do travel a lot. I think, you know, information is key. I love to just be in stores and talking to consumers about, you know, what they chose, what they're looking at. This is what keeps you young. And this is what keeps the pulse on our business. So always in front of customers and consumers. You know, I do get up pretty early and make sure I either work out before
the get up. What time do you get up?
So I get up. I'm every morning. I'm up around 5:30, 6 latest, and I'm either working out at home really quick, or I make sure I work out at lunch every day. So I'm definitely getting a workout in during the week. If without that, I'm definitely dead in the water. So you know, I'm 5 days a week doing something, either boxing, running in the morning, or some type of functional fitness. This is like something I got to do, or I will absolutely not be productive for the teams. And then I think, you know, the center of gravity for me really ranges when I'm in the office. I mean, some days it's really more on the US commercial business because I'm really close to that, working with the teams on what's selling and what's not, what the trends are. Some days I'm talking about what, you know, how we can create more demand. So I'm talking about, you know, culturally what's going on, influencers. And then some days I'm more, you know, working with the product creation on the future. This is a very interesting business. I mean, we're creating 18 months out, right? We try to get that calendar closer, but we're creating a product pipeline that's 18 months out. So right now we're working on product for fall, winter of 25. But as a CEO, you also have a foot in today, what's happening with the business today. And so it really, every day really ranges. I try to keep in front of the young people as much as I can. You know, this is the most important thing for me is a pulse on the young.
But let me ask you a question on that. Your social media is bare. Your Instagram is bare. We live in a world, Instagram world. You are the face. You're a phenomenal speaker. You have great advice. You're very inspiring. Why not put yourself more out there into the day of the CEO of Reebok, which a lot of, you know, I think Phil Knight is probably 150 years old. No one really knows who the CEO of Adidas is. Kevin Plank is not there anymore. And, you know, you're on the touch. And I think are just putting up motivational stuff on point with the brand or just interviewing customers as CEO, I think that would go a long way, especially connecting, like here's the CEO of a big company talking to the consumers in the shoe store and you know, bringing smiles or being there. So why haven't you done that? Because you have a gift. So sometimes you see this very left brain person. You're like, okay, I get it. You're not there, but you're a personality. Why haven't you done that?
I think it's a great question. I've been asked this before. I don't know if I have a real good answer for it other than that I am just moving a mile a minute right now trying to, you know, turn this brand. This is an amazing opportunity that I've been given. It's a big responsibility. And so right now I am just maniacally focused on the turnaround of the brand. You know, we're hiring new people. I'm meeting new operators around the world that are helping us grow the business. So I guess for lack of a better answer, I've just been kind of focused on the turnaround. But I think that
you could have a camera crew follow you around and do some edits. I mean, stuff while you're in the store.
Yeah.
Right?
So. Yeah, fair.
I think you should. I think because I think your messaging is on par. People like to see the face behind the stuff. And clearly you're super motivated. And I think that's why the team responded. Joe, what do you think? We've heard this amazing interview. It started with you. I think the brand, I still remember wearing pumps in basketball game, and I would literally psychologically pump it. It was kind of like, I remind the pump of being, for those who've seen the movie Over the Top, where Stallone would put the hat backwards and then all of a sudden he'd be strong, which is the first movie I ever saw. That's how I felt with the pump. No joke. Like, I would literally psychologically pump the thing, and it would sort of like go in there, and I felt like I was invisible because I just pumped the stuff. It's so weird. I mean, I was young, but it was there. Joe, what do you think, listening to this and the direction of Reebok and the excitement in Todd's voice, and how do you feel?
Well, I think this is wonderful that we have Todd up there now, because that was my dream for the company. It needed driving. It needs somebody up there who can talk, somebody who knows the business, somebody who loves the business. And so we got the right person up there. And yeah, like you say, you as a motivational coach, exactly. You're seeing what's needed. And I think that's great. You know, we can go back now. We go back to influencers. That has been the standby for marketing for sports trade ever since my grandfather gave his shoes away to the best runners who would give him world records. So that's a standby. But white space is the secret. Find some white space. And white space is dropping away. It's like you say, just finding something a little bit different. So going out there, doing something different, that's great. So keep your eye on any white space, whatever it is. And you know, those are the things that that change the industry. You know, they're the things that move it along a bit. And yes, Nike have done volume. Adidas have done volume, but as you say, they seem a little bit sort of out of touch these days. They're not touching people. So I think where we are now with Todd, he's ready to touch people. And if you can do that.
Well, I will say this. I've never had the CEO of Nike. I've never had the CEO of Under Armour. And so why would I encourage brands that are not brands of the people? And Reebok is a brand of the people. So I think I'm officially going to switch over to Reebok, Todd. And I'm going to go on this thing to wear Reebok stuff. And I think, because I love the underdog. I've always loved the underdog story. And Nike is not an underdog anymore. It's a machine, you know. So Reebok is, you know, a phenomenal product that I think everyone can get behind. And because as they're reinventing their journey, we're all reinventing ourselves somewhere, somehow. Yeah. And a brand, Reebok is a brand we can relate to. You know, whether you're running and you're trying to win, or just in a day-to-day life trying to get to point A to point B, you know, we are what we wear a lot of times, right? And we make a statement. And when you put on a pair of Reebok, just know that, you know what, I may be the underdog today. And as they grow, we grow. And, you know, I think that's the journey of anyone. We all want to win at life, and winning means different things for different people. And I think that's the really cool part here, that, you know, brands, it got lost and now it's back. Big brand ambassadors, excitement, by the way, great hoodie, by the way, I have to say, I have to give you a compliment on the hoodie. It looks really good. That's it. So I would recommend everybody to give it a chance, support the brand, you know, feel how it feels. And, you know, and sometimes you're realizing, you know what, this is, you know, and sometimes when's the last time you tried something the first time? You know, we get stuck sometimes at the one vertical, and like Todd said, people are trying different things. Try it, and you just may never go back. And I hope this interview, you know, when you meet Joe, or we ever see Todd, or you see Todd on social media when he does his video, remember that he's connecting with you and he cares. And that's how you grow a brand. And it's very hard to do. And I think they've done a phenomenal job. I want to thank both of you for being on here today for a super inspiring interview into the past, you know, the present, the future, but also traditional understanding that history is all part of where we're going, but innovate and never forget the roots, which is what Reebok has gone back to. And it started with you, Joe Foster, who I just found out he's 89. He's going to be 89 years old. I thought he was 81. He's a machine. I don't know. I know it's the shoes. It's the shoes. That's the next campaign, right? By the way, if you're wearing New Balance, you're getting older, right? So wear Reebok, it makes you young. That's the fountain of youth are the classics as well. Thank you to the both of you. Like, subscribe, share it with someone, because I think this is going to hit you and inspire other people as well. We'll see you next time on the show.